3. The planet wedding speech, which Jim Briskin delivered that night, taped earlier during the day and then beamed from the RL satellite, was too painful for Salisbury Heim to endure. Therefore, he took an hour off and sought relief, as many men did. He boarded a jetab and shortly was on his way to the Golden Door Moments of Bliss satellite. Let Jim blab away about Bruno Mini's crackpot engineering program, he said to himself as he rested in the rear seat of the rising AB, grateful for this interval of relaxation. Let him cut his own throat, but at least I don't have to be dragged down to defeat along with him. I'm tempted, sometime before Election Day, to cut myself loose and go over to the SRCD party. Beyond doubt, Bill Schwartz would take him on. By an intricate route, Heim had already sounded the opposition out. Schwartz had, through this careful indirect linkage, expressed pleasure at the idea of Heim joining forces with him. However, Heim was not really ready to make his move. He had not pursued the topic further. At least not until today. This new painful bombshell. And at a time when the party had troubles enough already. The fact of the matter was, and he knew this from the latest polls, that Jim Briskin was trailing Schwartz. Despite the fact that he had all the cull vote, and that included non-Negro dark races such as Puerto Ricans on the East Coast and the Mexicans on the West. It was not a shoo-in by any means. And why was Briskin trailing? Because all the whites would be going to the polls, whereas only about 60% of the culls would show up on Election Day. Incredibly, they were apathetic toward Jim. Perhaps they believed, and he had heard this said, that Jim had sold out to the white power structure, that he was not authentically a leader of the cull people as such. And in a sense, this was true, because Jim Briskin represented whites and culls alike. "We're there, sir," the AB driver, a cull, informed him. The AB slowed, came to rest on the breast-shaped vehicle port of the satellite, a dozen yards from the pink nipple which served as a location signal device. "You're Jim Briskin's campaign manager?" the driver said, turning to face him. "Yeah, I recognize you. Listen, Mr. Heim, he's not a sellout, is he? I heard a lot of folk argue that, but he wouldn't do it. I know that." "Jim Briskin," Heim said as he dug for his wallet, "has sold out nobody, and never will. You can tell your buddies that because it's the truth." He paid his fare, feeling grumpy. Grumpy as hell. "But is it true that he's working with the whites?" "Yes." "He's working with me, and I'm white. So what? Are the whites supposed to disappear when Briskin is elected? Is that what you want? Because if it is, you're not going to get it." "I see what you mean, I guess," the driver said, nodding slowly. "You infer he's for all the people, right? He's got the interest of the white minority at heart just like he has the cull majority. He's going to protect everybody, even including you whites." "That's right," Salisbury Heim said as he opened the AB door. "As you put it, even including you whites." He stepped out on the pavement. "Yes, even us," he said to himself, "because we merit it." "Hello there, Mr. Heim," a woman's melodious voice. Heim turned. "Thisbe," he said, pleased. "How are you?"
"I'm glad to see you haven't stayed below just because your candidate disapproves of us," Thisbe Olt said.
Archly, she raised her green-painted shining eyebrows. Her narrow, harlequin-like face glinted with countless dots of pure light embedded within her skin. It gave her eerie, nimbus-like countenance the appearance of constantly renewed beauty. And she had renewed herself over a number of decades. Willowy, almost frail, she fiddled with a tassel of stone-impregnated fabric draped about her bare arms. She had put on gay clothes in order to come out and greet him, and he was gratified. He liked her very much, had for some time now. Guardedly, Sal Heim said,
"What makes you think Jim Briskin has any bones to pick with the Golden Door, Thisbe? Has he ever actually said anything to that effect?"
As far as he knew, Jim's opinions on that topic had not been made public,
At least he had tried to keep them under wraps.
"We know these things, Sal," Thisby said. "I think you'd better go inside and talk with George Walt about it. They're down on Level C in their office. They have a few things to say to you, Sal. I know because they've been discussing it."
Annoyed, Sal said,
"I didn't come here."
But what was the use? If the owners of the Golden Door satellite wanted to see him, it was undoubtedly advisable for him to come around.
"Okay,"
he said, and followed Thisby in the direction of the elevator. It always distressed him, despite his efforts to the contrary, to find himself engaged in conversation with George Walt. They were a mutation of a special sort. He had never seen anything quite like them. Nonetheless, although handicapped, George Walt had risen to great economic power in this society. The Golden Door Moments of Bliss satellite, it was rumored, was only one of their holdings. They were spread extensively over the financial map of the modern world. They were a form of mutated twinning, joined at the base of the skull so that a single cephalic structure served both separate bodies. Evidently, the personality George inhabited one hemisphere of the brain, made use of one eye, the right, as he recalled. And the personality Walt existed on the other side, distinct with its own idiosyncrasies, views, and drives, and its own eye from which to view the outside universe. A uniformed attendant, a sort of cop, stopped Sal as the elevator doors opened on Level C.
"Mr. George Walt wanted to see me," Sal said. "Or so Miss Holt tells me, at least."
"This way, Mr. Heim," the uniformed attendant said, touching his cap respectfully and leading Sal down the carpeted, silent hall. He was led into a large chamber, and there on a couch sat George Walt. Both bodies at once rose to their feet, supporting between them the common head. The head, containing the unmingled entities of the brothers, nodded in greeting, and the mouth smiled. One eye, the left, regarded him steadily, while the other wandered vaguely off, as if preoccupied. The two necks joined the head in such a way that the head and face were tilted slightly back. George Walt tended to look slightly over whomever they were talking to, and this added to the unique impression. It made them seem formidable, as if their attention could not really be engaged. The head was normal size, however, as were both bodies. The body to the left, Sal did not recall which of them it was, wore informal clothing, a cotton shirt and slacks with sandals on the feet. The right-hand body, however, was formally dressed in a single-breasted suit, tie, and buttoned gray cape. And the hands of the right body were jammed deep into the trouser pockets, a stance which gave to it an aura of authority, if not age. It seemed distinctly older than its twin.
"This is George," the head said pleasantly. "How are you, Sal Heim? Good to see you."
The left body extended its hand. Sal walked toward the two of them and gingerly shook hands. The right-hand body, Walt, did not want to shake with him. Its hands remained in its pockets.
"This is Walt," the head said, less pleasantly then. "We wanted to discuss your candidate with you, Heim. Sit down and have a drink. Here, what can we fix for you?"
Together, the two bodies managed to walk to the sideboard, where an elaborate bar could be seen. Walt's hands opened a bottle of bourbon, while George's expertly fixed an old-fashioned, mixed sugar and water and bitters together in the bottom of a glass. Together, George Walt made the drink and carried it back to Sal.
"Thanks," Sal Heim said, accepting the drink.
"This is Walt," the common head said to him. "We know that if Jim Briskin is elected, he'll instruct his attorney general to find ways to shut the satellite down. Isn't that a fact?"
The two eyes, together now, fixed themselves on him in an intense, astute gaze.
"I don't know where you heard that," Sal said evasively.
"This is Walt," the head said. "There's a leak in your organization. That's where we heard it. You realize what this means? We'll have to throw our support behind Schwartz. And you know how many transmissions we make to Earth in a single day."
Sal sighed. The Golden Door kept a perpetual stream of junk, honky-tonk, stag-type shows,
pouring down over a variety of channels, available to and widely watched by almost everyone in the country. The shows, especially the climactic orgy in which Thisbe herself, with her famous display of expanding and contracting muscles, working in 20 directions simultaneously and in 4 colors, appeared, were a come-on for the activity of the satellite. But it would be duck soup to work in an anti-Briskin bias. The satellite's announcers were slick pros. Downing his drink, he rose and started toward the door.
Go ahead and stick to your stag shows on Jim. We'll win the election anyhow, and then you can be sure he'll shut you. In fact, I personally guarantee it right now.
The head looked uneasy.
Dirty pool, it stammered.
Sal shrugged.
I'm just protecting the interests of my client. You've been making threats toward him. You started it, both of you.
This is George, the head said rapidly. Here's what I think we ought to have. Listen to this, Walt. We want Jim Briskin to come up here to the Golden Door and be photographed publicly. It added in applause for itself. Good idea. Get it, Sal? Briskin arrives here, covered by all the media, and visits one of the girls. It'll be good for his image because it'll show he's a normal guy and not some creep. So you benefit from this. And while he's here, Briskin compliments us. It added, a good final touch, but optional. For instance, he says the national interest has...
He'll never do it, Sal said. He'll lose the election first.
The head said plaintively,
we'll give him any girl he wants. My lord, we have 5,000 to choose from. No luck, Sal Heim said. Now, if you were to make that offer to me, I'd take you up on it in a second. But not Jim. He's old-fashioned.
That was as good a way to put it as any.
He's a Puritan. You can call him a remnant of the 20th century if you want.
Or 19th, the head said venomously.
Say anything you want, Sal said, nodding. Jim won't care. He knows what he believes in. He thinks the satellite is undignified. The way it's all handled up here, boom, 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 mechanically, with no personal touch, no meeting of humans on a human basis. You run an autofac. I don't object, and most people don't object, because it saves time. But Jim does, because he's sentimental.
Two right arms gestured at Sal menacingly, as the head said loudly,
to hell with that! We're as sentimental up here as you can get! We play background music in every room. The girls always learn the customer's first name, and they're required to call him by that and nothing else. How sentimental can you get, for Christ's sakes? What do you want?
In a higher-pitched voice, it roared on.
A marriage ceremony before and then a divorce procedure afterward. So it constitutes a legal marriage. Is that it? Or do you want us to teach the girls to sew Mother Hubbards and bloomers, and you pay to see their ankles, and that's it? Listen, Sal.
Its voice dropped a tone, became ominous and deadly.
Listen, Sal Heim, it repeated. We know our business. Don't tell us our business, and we won't tell you yours. Starting tonight, our TV announcers are going to insert a plug for Schwartz in every telecast to Earth. Right in the middle of the glorious chef d'oeuvre, you know what, where the girls... Well, you know. Yes, I mean that part. And we're going to make a campaign out of this. Really put it over. We're going to ensure Bill Schwartz's re-election, it added. And ensure that Carl Fink's thorough total defeat.
Sal said nothing. The great carpeted office was silent.
No response from you, Sal. You're going to sit idly by. I came up here to visit a girl I like, Sal said. Sparky Rivers, her name is. I'd like to see her now.
He felt weary.
She's different from all the others. At least all I've tried.
Rubbing his forehead, he murmured,
No, I'm too tired now. I've changed my mind. I'll just leave.
If she's as good as you say, the head said, it won't require any energy from you. It laughed in appreciation of its wit.
Send a fray named Sparky Rivers down here, it instructed, pressing a button on its desk.
Sal Heim nodded dully.
There was something to that. And after all, this was what he had come here for, this ancient, appreciated remedy.
"You're working too hard," the head said acutely. "What's the matter, Sal? Are you losing? Obviously you need our help. Very badly, in fact."
"Help, schmelp," Sal said. "What I need is a 6-week rest and not up here. I ought to take an ab to Africa and hunt spiders or whatever the craze is right now."
With all his problems, he had lost touch.
"Those big trench-digging spiders are out now," the head informed him. "Now it's nocturnal moths again."
Walt's right arm pointed at the wall, and Sal saw, behind glass, 3 enormous iridescent cadavers, displayed under an ultraviolet lamp which brought out all their many colors.
"Caught them myself," the head said, and then chided itself. "No, you didn't. I did. You saw them, but I popped them into the killing jar."
Sal Heim sat silently waiting for Sparky Rivers. As the 2 inhabitants of the head argued with each other as to which of them had brought back the African moths. The top-notch and expensive and dark-skinned private investigator, Tito Crivelli, operating out of New York, handed the woman seated across from him the findings which his All-TAC 360 computer had derived from the data provided it. It was a good machine.
40 hospitals, Tito said. 40 transplant operations within last year. Statistically, it's unlikely that the UN Vital Organ Fund Reserve would have had that many organs available in so limited a time, but it is possible. In other words, we've got nothing.
Mrs. Myra Sands smoothed her skirt thoughtfully, then lit a cigarette.
"We'll select at random from among the 40. I want you to follow at least 5 or 6 up. How long will it take for you to do that?"
Tito calculated silently.
"Say 2 days. If I have to go there and see people. Of course, if I can do some of it on the phone."
He liked to work through the VidPhone Corporation of America's product. It meant he could stick near the All-TAC 360. And when anything came up, he could feed the data on the spot, get an opinion without delay. He respected the 360. It had set him back a great deal a year ago when he had purchased it. And he did not intend to permit it to lie idle, not if he could help it. But sometimes... This was a difficult situation. Myra Sands was not the sort who could endure uncertainty. For her, things had to be either this or that, either A or not A. Myra made use of Aristotle's law of the excluded middle, like no one else he knew. He admired her. Myra was a handsome, extremely well-educated woman, light-haired in her middle 40s. Across from him, she sat erect and trim in her yellow lunar squeak frog suit, her legs long and without defect. Her sharp chin alone let on, to Tito at least, the grimness, the no-nonsense aspect of her personality. Myra was a businesswoman first, before anything else. As one of the nation's foremost authorities in the field of therapeutic abortions, she was highly paid and highly honored, and she was well aware of this. After all, she had been at it for years, and Tito respected anyone who lived as an independent business person. After all, he too was his own boss, beholden to no one, to no subsidizing organization or economic entity. He and Myra had something in common. Although, of course, Myra would have denied it. Myra Sands was a terrible goddamn snob. To her, Tito Crivelli was an employee whom she had hired to find out, or rather to establish as fact, certain information about her husband. He could not imagine why Lurton Sands had married her. Surely it had been conflict, psychological, social, sexual, professional, from the start. However, there was no explaining the chemistry which joined men and women, locked them in embraces of hate and mutual suffering, sometimes for 90 years on end. In his line, Tito had seen plenty of it, enough to last him even a Jerry lifetime.
"Call Lattimore Hospital in San Francisco,"
Myra instructed in her crisp, vigilantly authoritative voice. "In August, Lurton transplanted a spleen for an army major there. I think his name was Wallach, or some such quiddity as that. I recall at the time, Lurton had had, what shall I say, a little too much to drink.
It was evening and we were having dinner. Lurton blurted out some darn thing or other about paying heavily for the spleen. You know, Tito, that VOFR prices are rigidly set by the UN, and they're not high. In fact, they're too low. That's the cardinal reason the fund runs out of certain vital organs so often. Not from a lack of supply so much as the existence of too darn many takers.
Hmm, Tito said, jotting notes.
Lurton always said that if the VOFR only were to raise its rates... You're positive it was a spleen?
Tito broke in.
Yes.
Myra nodded curtly, exhaling streamers of gray smoke that swirled toward the lamp behind her, a cloud that drifted in the artificial light of the office. It was dark outside now. The time was 7:30.
A spleen,
Tito recapitulated.
In August of this year, at Lanamore General Hospital in San Francisco, an army major named...
Now I'm beginning to think it was Wozzeck,
Myra put in.
Or is that an opera composer?
It's an opera, Wozzeck,
Tito said,
by Berg. Seldom perform now.
He lifted the receiver off the vidphone.
I'll get a hold of the business office at Lattimore. It's only 4:30 out there on the coast.
Myra rose to her feet and roamed restlessly about the office, rubbing her gloved hands together in a motion that irritated Tito and made it difficult for him to concentrate on his call.
Have you had dinner?
He asked her as he waited on the line.
No, but I never eat until 8:30 or 9. It's barbaric to eat any earlier.
Tito said,
Can I take you to dinner, Mrs. Sains? I know an awfully good little Armenian place in the village. The food's actually prepared by humans.
Humans? As compared to what?
Automatic food processing systems,
Tito murmured.
Or don't you ever eat in auto-prep restaurants?
After all, the Sands were wealthy. Possibly they normally enjoyed human-prepared food.
Personally, I can't stand auto-preps. The food's always so predictable. Never burned. Never.
He broke off. On the vidscreen, the miniature features of an employee at Lattimore had formed.
Miss, this is Life Factors Research Consultants of New York calling. I'd like to inquire about an operation performed on a Major Wozzeck, or Wallach, last August, a spleen transplant.
Wait, Myra said suddenly.
Now I remember. It wasn't a spleen. It was an islands of Langerhans. You know, that part of the pancreas which controls sugar production in the body. I remember because Lurton got to talking about it, because he saw me putting 2 teaspoons full of sugar in my coffee.
I'll look that up,
the girl at Lattimore said, overhearing Myra. She turned to her files.
What I want to find out, Tito said to her, is the exact date at which the organ was obtained from the UN's VOFR. If you can give me that datum, please.
He waited, accustomed to having to be patient. His line of work absolutely required that virtue above all others, including intelligence. The girl presently said,
A Colonel Weisswasser received an organ transplant on August 12 of this year. Islands of Langerhans obtained from the VOFR the day before, August 11. Dr. Lurton Sands performed the operation and, of course, certified the organ.
Thanks, miss, Tito said and broke the connection.
The VOFR office is closed,
Myra said, as he began once more to dial.
You'll have to wait until tomorrow.
I know somebody there,
Tito said and continued dialing. At last he had Gus Anderton, his contact at the UN's Vital Organ Bank.
Gus, this is Tito. Check August 11 this year for me. Islands of Langerhans, okay?
See if the org trans surgeon we previously had reference to picked up one there on that date. His contact was back almost at once with the information.
Correct, Tito. It all checks out. August 11, Islands of Langerhans. Transferred by jet hopper to Lattimore in San Francisco. Routine in every way.
Tito Crivelli cut the circuit, exasperated. After a pause, Myra Sands, still pacing restlessly about his office, exclaimed,
But I know he's been obtaining organs illegally. He never turned anybody down. And you know there never have been that many organs in the bank reserve. He had to get them somewhere else. He still is, I know it.
Knowing this and proving this are two...
Turning to him, Myra snapped.
And outside of the UN bank, there's only one other place he would or could go.
Agreed, Tito said, nodding. But as your attorney said, you better have proof before you make the charge. Otherwise, he'll sue you for slander, libel, defamation of character. The entire biz. He'd have to. You'd give him no choice.
You don't like this, Myra said.
Tito shrugged. I don't have to like it. That doesn't matter.
But you think I'm treading on dangerous ground.
I know you are. Even if it's true that Lurton Sands...
Don't say even if. He's a fanatic and you know it. He identifies so fully with his public image as a savior of lives that he simply had to make a psychological break with reality. Probably he started in a small way, with what he told himself was a unique situation, an exception. He had to have a particular organ and he took it. And the next time...
She shrugged.
It was easier. And so on.
Oh, I see, Tito said.
I think I see what we're going to have to do, Myra said. What you're going to have to do. Get started on this. Find out from your contact at the UN exactly what organ the bank lacks at this time. Then deliberately set up another emergency situation. Have someone in a hospital somewhere apply to Lurton for that particular transplant. I realize that it'll cost one hell of a lot of money, but I'm willing to underwrite the expense. Do you see?
I see, Tito said. In other words, trap Lurton Sands. Play on the man's determination to save the life of a dying person. Make his humanitarianism the instrument of his destruction. What a way to earn a living, Tito thought to himself. Another day, another dollar. It's hardly that. Not when you get involved in something like this.
I know you can arrange it, Myra said to him fervently. You're good. You're experienced, aren't you?
Yes, Mrs. Sands, Tito said. I'm experienced. Yes, possibly I can trap the guy. Lead him by the nose. It shouldn't be too hard.
Make sure your patient offers him plenty,
Myra said in a bitter, taut voice.
Lurton will bite if he senses a good financial return. That's what interests him. In spite of what you and the darn public may or may not imagine. I ought to know. I lived with him for a good many years, shared his most intimate thoughts.
She smiled briefly.
It seems a shame I have to tell you how to go about your business, but obviously I have to.
Her smile returned, cold and exceedingly hard.
I appreciate your assistance, Tito said woodenly. No, you don't. You think I'm trying to do something wicked, something out of mere spite.
Tito said, I don't think anything. I'm just hungry.
Maybe you don't eat until 8:30 or 9, but I have pyloric spasms and I have to eat by 7.
Will you excuse me?
He rose to his feet, pushing his desk chair back.
I want to close up shop.
He did not renew his offer to take her out to dinner. Gathering up her coat and purse, Myra Sands said,
Have you located Callie Vale? And if so, where?
No luck, Tito said, and felt uncomfortable.
Staring at him, Myra said, But why can't you locate her? She must be somewhere.
She looked as if she could not believe her ears.
The court process servers can't find her either, Tito pointed out. But I'm sure she'll turn up by trial time.
He, too, had been wondering why his staff had been unable to locate Lurton Sands' mistress. After all, there were only a limited number of places a person could hide, and detection and tracing devices, especially during the last 2 decades, had improved to an almost supernatural accuracy. Myra said,
I'm beginning to think you're just not any good. I wonder if I shouldn't put my business in somebody else's hands.
That's your privilege, Tito said. His stomach ached, a series of spasms of his pyloric valve. He wondered if he was ever going to get an opportunity to eat tonight.
You must find Miss Vale, Myra said. She knows all the details of his activity. That's why he's got her hidden. In fact, she's pumping blood with a heart he procured for her.
Okay, Mrs. Sands, Tito agreed, and inwardly winced at the growing pain.